chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am thrilled to have Don Barden on the show today. Don is a former 25-year Wall Street executive, an entrepreneur, author, speaker, and is the CEO and senior partner at The Perfect Plan and Georgia Extracts. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. So Don, welcome to the Something Extra Podcast. I have been looking so forward to this conversation with you. And the reason is because the first time you and I had a conversation, I seriously could have talked to you for hours. I mean, I remember going later that night telling Greg, I just met this guy today. You've got to meet him. You're going to love him. But I have to give a special shout out to our mutual friend, Dave Sanderson. Because Dave and I, we've known, Dave was speaking at an event here in St. Louis like several years ago, and I went up afterwards, met him, and we stayed connected, and he was on the podcast, and he's like, you know who you need to have on is Don Barden, and boy, I am so glad he connected us, Don.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, Dave's a great guy. You know, he's famous for all the wrong reasons. I mean, nobody wants to say, hey, I survived a plane crash. You know, he's on US 1549, the flight in the Hudson. And just really impacted his life, and he's dedicated to helping other people, just like you. And I really thought that you were in a plane crash, but I really appreciate what you're doing, because I've gone back and listened to so many of your podcasts. I follow your work, and it's amazing. I mean, you're planting seeds all over the world, helping people be better leaders and inspired leaders. And I tell you, the world needs more of you. So thank you, Lisa.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Yeah, you had told me a quote on as a sidebar about you're planting seeds for a tree that you may never enjoy the shade for, right? And we don't know, Don, we really don't, but I'm hoping that we are just going to touch scrape the tip of the iceberg today with you, because you've got so much wisdom, and I know that your insights are going to help our listeners. So thanks again for making the time. So I know you're married to Lisa, good yep. name.
Yep, I can remember that one. That's good.
You got three boys, but I really want to talk about how you grew up, because your dad was in the Army. And, you know, you even say that you attribute so much of your success to that influence, of that military influence when you were growing up. So tell me a little bit about that story.
Yeah, my dad, he was a Depression era kid, grew up during World War II, and he was drafted right afterwards. So he was occupation forces. And, you know, he's an interesting guy. He was 3rd Army, 3rd Armor, 65th Tank Battalion. So he's a tank guy. If you ever seen the movie Fury with Brad Pitt, that's what he did. And it was really an interesting time. And his influence, even though by the time Vietnam was going full swing and he was kind of moving into active reserve when I was born, you know, it was still a big part, because I think it created structure for him and organization. And it was sort of a tribal thing that he was very, very proud of, because he grew up like I did. I mean, we never had any money and we were very poor. But the military meant something to him. But the discipline and the organization and being a part of something bigger than yourself, I think, meant a lot to him. And he passed that down onto me. And the work ethic, I can't stress enough the work ethic that he put forth for me. So, it was a wonderful upbringing. You know, I always laugh. People say, oh, I grew up poor, but I never knew it. I knew it and I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
No, I'm like, this is terrible. What is going on here? But I didn't know any different. And I think in his generation, from the Depression era through the wars and everything else, it was just like, hey, you take your lot in life and you work hard and make the best out of it. But there was just something different that sort of sparked in me that there's more out there. So yeah, a lot to him. And I'm still very close with the Army and do a lot of work with them now and love every bit of it.
You do. And I want to talk about that more. I definitely want to talk about that. So you've already talked about the influence. You know, your dad, I think, was at Fort Benning and at Fort Knox.
Correct.
So my father-in-law was at Fort Knox. My father was a sergeant in the Army. Yes. So, and of course, that's in Kentucky, which, you know, is our stomping ground.
Oh, yeah.
So, but with your dad, you said, you know, you knew that you were poor. You're like, there's got to be something more here. And so
there's got to be something better.
Yeah. And I think even your dad, you said, had some encouragement and some influence to do something different. And so you took that to heart. I don't want to belabor this too much, but wow, Don. I mean, I'm just going to real quickly, like, talk about your education background. So you have a Bachelor of Business Admin, Economics and Finance from Kennesaw, Master of MBA Global Tech from American Intercontinental, Doctoral Studies from Walden, Certificate in Cybersecurity. You're working on your Doctor of Philosophy now, right? You haven't finished that.
I went back for another one. I have nothing else better to do. Apparently.
You have nothing else better to do. But here's what you ended up doing with all that. You said you became an economist, but I think you call it an frustrated anthropologist.
Yeah. I'm technically an economist. Spent 25 years on Wall Street working for Wall Street firms, but I prefer the term frustrated anthropologist because most of my peers, and I don't have any problem saying this about them, but most economists like to tell you about yesterday's news. And they like to tell you how they predicted it a few years ago, although they never can find that actual prediction, but they all swear up and down that they predicted it. I'm more concerned about the future. I care more about why people make the decisions they do, which drives economics. And if you can help somebody believe in a better and a brighter future, if you can take the science of what we know, apply it to behavior, and really understand the human being, you know, what it is that makes them go, what makes person special, then you get to see that we're all beautiful creatures and it's a big, big, beautiful world. And it doesn't matter if we predict something or not, just go live life to the fullest. So I prefer to look forward where most of my peers like to talk about yesterday.
Well, I know you spent 25 years on Wall Street. What was it like working on Wall Street? Now, here's the things, the stories we've all heard, it's brutal. 80 to 100 hour weeks, 12 hour days, late nights, early morning. I mean, high pressure. You know, I eat what I can kill, you know, and if you don't kill it, then you don't eat. I think about literally the first thing that comes to my mind is Wolf of Wall Street, you know, the movies we've seen. But what was it like? I mean, you were there for 25 years.
Yeah, well, those movies are right. From the movie Wall Street, you know, with, what's his name, Michael Douglas and them, to the Wolf of Wall Street, all that. Those characters exist and they exist in everything. But the reality is Wall Street is a barometer. Wall Street is just a place. It's a physical place, but it's also something much, much bigger. It's a terminology around it. So when you look at how it drives the economy and what it does, it's very, very important. But it's just a reflection of what's happening in the rest of the world. It's a reflection of what the local deli owner is doing. It's a reflection of the general workforce and the middle markets and how they're buying new cars and the Fortune 100 to 500 and 1,000. So it's really just, it's just the movie of us is what it is. But it all comes together there and is special. And I got to work on the international circuit a lot. So I traveled all over the world. I'm very grateful for that. And I learned most of my lessons by traveling, to be honest with you, Lisa, because there's an old Mark Twain quote that said, if you want to solve all the world's problems, travel. And what that means is when you travel and you really realize how insignificant your problem is and how everybody's fighting something, everybody's got problems, you start putting it in perspective and you think, you know, it's not going to end. Everything's fine. The sun's going to come up. What can I do just to be better? What can I do to make things better for somebody else? And then you start realizing, wow, there's a lot of stuff happening, you know, out there. But yeah, those characters exist. But it's a very small fragment, but it's cool to talk about.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the point is you learned so much while you were there, Don. And we'll talk about this, but you've carried that forward with everything else you're doing. now, you know, but I was just thinking as you were talking about traveling the world, I love that quote. And we have not traveled the world like you have, but we have been other places. You know, we've been to some underdeveloped countries like El Salvador and Costa Rica. We've been to, you know, we've been to Europe, you know, with France and that sort of thing. But even in El Salvador, these underdeveloped countries that we were in, Don, there are so many similarities. Because, you know, the people there, they wanted good things for their children, just like we did. And we were there to give a hand up, not a hand out, which, I mean, is kind of my philosophy. But yeah, there's more similarities than differences. But boy, I tell you what, to your point, the problems that we have are really very insignificant compared to some of these countries that, you know, are trying to figure out how they're going to feed their child that day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that because I spent some time in China. And I remember the first time I was there, I was outside of Beijing and I had a translator and she was the most lovely person. And it was amazing what she did not know about the outside world. And she was perfect in her English. She had learned English, but I'd ask her about things that were happening and she had no clue of it. But what she did talk to me about and her eyes lit up and you could just feel her presence was her child, her little boy. And all she wanted was a better life for him. And it was just an amazing thing. And it doesn't matter if you're there. And before the Soviets collapsed, I spent time in the east-west border over there doing some work. And same thing, you're sitting there with somebody who does not believe that there's a better tomorrow, who, or at least recognizes that it could change tomorrow. It might not change for the good, but they're sitting there saying, how do we live today? How do I care for my family? What is it? So when you start realizing that at the end of your days, that's really all you've got is your family and your close-knit loved ones. Other people will come and go at like a season in your life. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Then you start to say, okay, what's really important? And I think when you separate between your personal, your professional, and your spiritual life, and you seek harmony, not balance, harmony, you start to realize, wow, what can I do to make sure that personally, my family and myself, that we're happy? Professionally, what am I doing that's good and helping other people grow? And spiritually, how am I continuing to grow? If all three of those are in harmony, you're fine. It doesn't matter if you've got the private jets and, you know, all these. It does not matter. It's what are you doing to make your life and also somebody else's life better? And it all works out. And that is universal. That's beyond Wall Street or anybody else's wildest dream.
Could not agree more with that. I love that. Well, you know, I've got so much here to talk about, Don, but you know what? You just gave me a really good break, I think. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Don Barden on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Don Barden. So, Don, thank you so much for giving us a little insight into Wall Street. But you learned so much while you were there. When you left Wall Street, you had the opportunity. You've learned so much about what it took to run successful businesses. You built billion-dollar teams. And so you had the opportunity to start possibly acquiring some companies. And I don't know how many you've acquired and sold, but I know one that we talked about was 3CI. And I'd love for you to talk to our listeners about that. But tell us about that journey coming out of Wall Street.
Yeah, it was great. And 3CI was a fabulous and a beautiful story, you know, into itself. But they were actually a client of mine when I was doing some of that financial work. And I had met them. And it was really interesting. Every client I would approach with the same methodology, I would just ask them a simple question in the beginning. I would say, tell me your story. And that's a very dangerous question because you better buckle up because most people will tell you and it might take a minute. But if you're present and you listen to them, not only are you being respectful with them, but I had no idea of the amount of knowledge I was getting and what they were telling me. And so I had hundreds, if not thousands of clients over all those decades that were feeding me and teaching me. And I didn't know the type of knowledge that was building up and the exposure I had, which is much, much greater than anything that could ever happen in any type of formal, you know, education. But I remember I got this call one day, and this is one of those, you know, I hate to say God thing because I think breathing is a God thing. So I don't know where you draw the line, right? It was definitely a divine inspiration. I got a call for some brokers. They said, hey, would you work in this company? They're in Atlanta and you spend a lot of time there. You live there. Would you be kind enough to do it? And I looked at the specs and I said, it's not what I do, but it's fine. But I'm trying to politely say it was too small for us to work on because it would take up more time than what we had. And it's just market space. It's no big deal. They say, well, please, it's a wonderful story. It's a sweet person. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll do it as a favor. So I went and met this lady who owned the company, and she was the most wonderful, charming, sweet, kind person I've ever met in my life. And I'll say this to this day, of all my travels, she's the best I've ever met. She just glows. She was angelic, to be honest with you. And the story that she told me was amazing, that her husband had started the company in the early mid 70s in technology. And he started it on a quest for integrity, that he had seen so many people in the early mid 70s was the embryonic growth stage of technology. You know, nobody knew what was happening. It was growing faster than what anybody could keep up
with. Yes.
It was just a mess. But he realized that people were promising something that was not true or they could not deliver. And he said, look, I've got to stop this. So he started a company called Comprehensive Computer Consulting Incorporated, which sounded awesome in 1975, but it morphed over time. And we changed the name when we purchased it to 3CI, which I thought was kind of cool and hip. But basically, she told me this incredible story about her husband built this company from scratch. It had grown and grown and grown. And then 20 something years later, she got a horrible phone call. And I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit. I don't want to take away from her story, but I'll never be able to do it justice. But she got a phone call that he had passed away unexpectedly. And so she's sitting there with four or five kids. I forgot how many. She's living the, I mean, she had a role, you know, she was taking care of the kids. He was running the business. They had this incredible marriage and an efficient family.
Partnership. Yes.
Yeah, the partner. It was just beautiful. It was a love affair like I've never seen before. And she all of a sudden said, oh, what am I going to do? I think she'd been to the office one time. And she picked up the phone, called their accountant, bookkeeper, who she knew from church, and said, I don't know how to run this company, but I know how to run a family. And so will you walk in there with me tomorrow? Because there's going to be a lot of scared people. Imagine you get a phone call that your husband of however many years, the father of your children, is gone. And you reach out beyond your own broken heart and say, there are other people that have broken hearts too. How do I care for them? So she marched in there that next day and said, we're going to do this. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to do it. And that month, Fortune magazine ran a cover story about women in charge. And it was about five women whose husbands had passed away. They inherited the business and started doing it. So everybody just starts sending her this magazine, which I think she said she's never even heard of Fortune magazine, you know, and she's going, oh my goodness, I've got to do this. She did it. She took that company and continued to grow and continue to build it. And I just fell in love. I mean, this is the most beautiful story, most beautiful person. She got remarried. It was a Brady Bunch thing. The guy's wife had passed away. They blended the families. It was just amazing.
And now they had 10 kids or something.
Oh, I don't know. I got a headache. Track of them all. It was amazing. But I took care of her, and I didn't realize how much she was taking care of me, what I was learning from her over the years. So it became this wonderful relationship in finance, but it was a charming thing that would do it. So after I left, I started my own consulting firm, and it was growing very, very fast. I mean, incredibly fast. And she called me one day and said, hey, would you come over and have tea? We had tea, literally like afternoon tea. And she was older at the time. And I said, sure, I'd be honored to do that. So I went and met her, and she said, hey, it's time for me to transition. It's time for me to let go of the company, and none of my kids really want this anymore. So I'm going to have to sell the company. And I said, great, I'll be happy to help you any way I can. I've got some experience in this, whatever I can do for you. And she said, I don't think I'm telling you this the right way, or you're not getting my vibe. And I said, what is it? And she said, I'm not selling the company to just anybody. I'm selling the company to you. And I said, well, what exactly does that mean? And she said, I'll never forget. She said, every time I go to bed at night and I say my prayers about who's supposed to have this company, I see your face and I want you to take this company from me. And I was very honored. And I said, look, I said, thank you. I said, I'm I have no words for the gratitude I have for you, but I got to be honest with you. Every time I say my prayers, I don't see that. So we are so far apart on the prayer spectrum here. We got to come to a middle ground here. So I went home that night and I was just, my brain was spinning and I'm like, this is just out of left field. And I told my wife and she looked at me like I was an idiot. She said, yeah, haven't you seen this coming? And I was like, no, why does everybody know this but me? And she said, look, this is meant to be. You're supposed to go buy that company. And my wife isn't exactly the type of person that's going to support me on stuff like this. She kind of wants to know about it after it's done because she doesn't want to deal with my enthusiasm. So I went back with her the next day and I sat down and I said, look, here's the deal. I would love and be honored to buy this company. I said, but you got to know the rules. I said, number one, there's no such thing as a win-win. There's only fair. So I want this to be fair for you and I want this to be fair for me. And I will pay you whatever the fair price is. We're not going to negotiate or haggle. I have too much respect for you. We'll get some people in. We'll figure out the price and we'll do it. She said, perfect. I said, second, I said, when you sell a company, it's like selling a house. You can't go back 6 months after you moved out and sold it to somebody and tell them that you don't like the way they painted it.
Right.
Right. So yeah. I cannot promise you the longevity of the 30 or 40 years that you've had in this company that I will maintain that. I said, but I believe in steward leadership, which means that we are here for a short period of time to steward something along. And if I'm here to be the transitional person here, I will take this company from you. But there's a real good chance I'm going to clean it up, polish it up, get it going. And then I might sell it to somebody else, but I'm only going to sell it to somebody who can do better than you and I combined. I want to hand it off to somebody who will do better in the future. She said, great. And I said, and then the other thing is, I really don't want to, who did you wake up with in the morning moment here? So I want to put in somebody as we're going through the process that's going to run the company so that when we're at full throttle, because it takes, you don't just write a check, you know, it takes 4 or 5 months of diligence and just working things. I said, I want to be, when we're at full speed, I want to have this thing going and I want to have a leadership team in place. And we're going to start today knowing that we have the full faith that this thing's going to close. And I said, worst case scenario, if it doesn't close, if something happens to me, if I back out or whatever, you're going to have the best leadership team you've ever had. And she said, do it. So we started it out. And another one of those divine things, I went to a friend of mine who was the head of technology at a Fortune 20 company. And I said, hey, this is crazy. I'm thinking about doing this, but I need a who. And I believe in who, not how, which means I don't need to know how to do something. I need to know who knows how to do something. Right.
That's so good.
I need somebody to be the president of this company that's going to run it. I'm not going to be there every day. I need somebody who can be the best. And he said, let me think about it. And he called me the next day and he gave me a name. He said, just do this. Find this person. So I called the guy up and I said, this is weird. You don't know me. I don't know you, but you come as a great referral. Would you like to have a lunch and chat about something? And he said, yes. And I just fell in love with this guy.
The rest is history. I mean, you guys grew that from like a 3% kind of flatline growth to, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Don, like close to 90% year-over-year growth. I mean, it was phenomenal growth. And one of the things that you did, and we don't have time to go into everything, but you know, you had a motto, think differently about how we think about the way we think, you know, you're about innovation. And so, you know, just for our listeners, this was an IT staffing firm. And of course, that's what Technology Partners, IT Staffing Solutions and Leadership. But, you know, I've got to ask you this question, and I don't know, this is kind of the secret sauce, and you may not tell me this, but I'm very interested in the answer to this question. You said you did some innovative things to speed up the process of getting the right talent to the companies much faster. And I will tell you, Don, and you know this yourself, there is a war on talent.
Yeah.
It is just, I mean, that is really right now, that is probably our biggest challenge, is finding the talent. So finding the right talent. So what in the world can you give me just a couple of things that you did?
Yeah, we did two things. I'll be honest with you. So we didn't want to look at it as a staffing company. We want to look at it as a partnership company that we work with these big companies and say, look, our job is to help you get somewhere fast. Right. And I know you're terrified of hiring somebody. So you want to use us. And At the same time, if you use us, you're going to go after our talent. So it's this kind of dog chasing his own tail thing. Yes. If you get a big client, guess what? They're going to start stealing your people from you. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of the game. So I went to them and had very, very honest conversations about, we want to put the best people here. We want to get them fast. But it's called trust. You've got to trust us to do this. And they said, well, how are you going to do this? And I said, well, we're going to go through a vetting process. It's going to be so easy for you. You're not just going to call us and call four or five other agencies out there and just look at all the talent pool. You're going to look at us and say, okay, you've already vetted this thing. So we invested a lot of money into a studio. And this is before really iPhones and the technology we have now. But we built a Hollywood type studio. We would have all of our talent come in and we would do interviews with them. And it would be edited just like you would a Hollywood edit. And they would get the client would ultimately get a 2 or 3 minute segment of the person that's professionally done, makeup, styling, everything, but very, very specific questions around the job and the skill set they were looking for. But then we also tested their cognitive and cognitive behavior. And we said, look, this is the person that's going to come work for you. And they knew everything about it. But most importantly, we did the reverse on them. So we would go to these big clients we had, and I said, I want to know about your behavior. I want to test you. I want to know what teams these folks are going to be working on. So it was almost like a matchmaker.com for talent. So we knew what both sides were looking for. I got out of what we called slinging bodies, throwing consultants out there and hoping for the best. We really went at this like we're matching them with somebody they're going to want to hire themselves. So it's sort of counterintuitive. But I just always felt that if we could help our clients get someplace better than they are now, get them there faster with integrity and trust, we would win. So we were the first ones to move into studios. We were the first ones to start doing real hardcore TV ads. We had a television show that was on every Sunday morning called Atlanta Tech Edge that talked about that highlighted the technology growth, you know, that was going on. So we just threw everything we had
set up as thought leaders. And again, Don, really back to that word, that little five-letter word, trust. I mean, really built credibility with you guys that you were vetting these people. You know, you had the thought leadership that you were putting out there. So that's really good. That's good.
Yeah, well, we worked. Relationship is what we did. It wasn't just we didn't want to be a temp agency. We wanted to be partners. And I think they appreciated that. But we had to deliver. You know, at the end of the day, big game.
At the end of the day, delivery. Yes, delivery is the key, right?
You know what else we want to do too? We were open about this. We wanted to be heroes. We told clients, you know, you are in this war for talent. You're having a fight. Let us be your hero. You get all the credit. We do all the work, but let us be your personal little hero. And everyone from HR directors to hiring managers to team leads were just, oh, please, please, what can you do? And we focused on it. We delivered and we maintained culture and integrity and it worked.
Very good. Well, I love, love, love that story. Well, gosh, I've got so much more I want to talk about. I do want to touch on this real quickly because with your dad, now you didn't enlist yourself. You went to Wall Street, but you have continued to build into the military. In fact, you're a frequent professor. I think this is so cool. You go to the U.S. Army Ranger Leadership Program and teach. Right. I love that, Don. And you're just teaching what you've learned leadership wise, right?
Yeah. Well, when I was on Wall Street, and I was working my doctorate the first time, they had funded it. And my theory was that because I traveled all over the world and met these really cool people, I realized that the best leaders all had the same common traits with each other, regardless of culture, language, business, whatever they're doing, they were all the same way. It's almost like that movie Groundhog's Day. I would go meet somebody in either Eastern Europe or India or Mexico or whatever, and I swear they were the same person because they were the best of the best. And so we studied what that was, what the elite leaders in the world do differently than everyone else, their communication style, their belief system, how they approach their mindset, everything. It's published, it's out there, and it did really, really well. And I was honored when the Army picked up on it and said, hey, we'd like for you to share this concept with our elite leadership team. And so I'm really, really proud of that. So they were U.S. Army Rangers are my guys. I love them to death. And we'll do anything.
And I know you and Lisa provide lots of scholarships too. I don't know how many kids you have helped, but I know it's probably in the hundreds, Don.
Yeah, I think we just broke 150 and we had our first kid graduate from college. So we're really excited about that.
That is so cool. Well, we could do a whole podcast on that and just giving back. But I do want to talk about The Perfect Plan. And sure. This is the book, and you've given me an ebook of this. And I think you're going to offer that to our listeners, which I'm so excited about. We'll talk about that a little bit more. Okay. But the title intrigues me. And it's really, is this the study that you did where you, I think it took 10 years or something like that of research, right?
Yeah. It took 5 years of hard qualitative and quantitative study. It took another 5 years of publication and just, you know, figuring it out. And then, I mean, it continues to evolve, but the core principles are pretty universal. They haven't changed.
And it's really how the elite, the 1%, do life, right? So I've got to ask you this because I've got the ebook, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I want to just talk to you just a minute about this. And I'd love for you to tell this story because I think it's so poignant. But you were working at some downtown department store and you were kind of the person, like if someone shoplifted, you were the person that went after that shoplifter and tackled him to the ground.
It's not a good job. No,
not a good job. Oh my goodness. But I just think it's so funny. You said, but that kind of led to something else. And one day you got back, you'd had a really long day and you got back and there was a message on your machine saying that the CEO wanted to meet you. And Don, I'm cracking up because you're saying, and I can see myself doing something. Well, what does he want to meet with me about? Is he going to make me the CFO?
I'm like, whoa, I was looking for the upside, right?
Right.
I was my senior year in college, undergrad. And, you know, like most college kids, I just had to get a job. And so I got a job working for a big old classic department store. And my job was to chase shoplifters. And it was not bright looking back at it because that's not a smart job. But it was great for me because I hung out near the front doors, which is where cosmetics and jewelry was, which is where all the pretty girls worked. So all I had to do was hang out and talk to pretty girls. If somebody grabbed something, I had 100 yards to knock them down and wait for the police to get there. And if they don't, then you let them go. But it got me through my senior year of college. But I did get a call, and the CEO I was in Atlanta, and the CEO of the company, which is based out of New York, was thinking about moving the headquarters to Atlanta. And they said, hey, look, we know you're a pretty bright guy and you're about to graduate. You're probably looking for your career. The CEO is looking for an aide, someone to kind of carry his bags, drive him around, run errands, do whatever. If you don't have a job yet coming out of college, we'd like for you to consider this. And I didn't have a job yet. And I said, sure, I would love that. And so I got to work for this gentleman who was just an amazing man. He started as a garment runner in New York in the 1920s when he was like 10 years old, before child labor laws kicked in. Worked his way up to the CEO of one of the most formidable department stores in the world. And I got to spend time with him. So I worked with him for about 6 months and he catapulted my career. I remember one day sitting in the car with him, I was driving him to the airport. He had me meet really cool people. He would send me to pick up Ralph Lauren and all these cool people and chat with them. And, you know, I was just a young kid who was smiling, was innocent and nice, you know, so it was a great thing. But I remember him telling me, I told him, I said, look, I love this. It's great, but it's not what I went to school for. You know, I want to do something. And he's the one that said, well, kid, you've got to go into Wall Street. You've got to go into financial services. He said, that's where all my rich friends are. And I said, well, okay, but how do I do that? And he set up a few interviews for me, but he told me, he said, let me tell you one thing you need to know, kid. He used to call me kid. He said, don't ever worry about money. He said, the most important thing you can do is control your schedule. He said, if you continue to work here in retail, you will not be in control of your schedule. You're going to be working 12, 14, 15 hours a day, just hard, hardcore labor for very, very little money. And then you might break through a ceiling in 15 or 20 years. He said, but if you can get into a job that you love, and he said, most importantly, control your schedule, you run it. He said, then you've made something out of yourself. And I thought, that's great. And I started the interview process and it took off. You know,
that is amazing. Well, he just taught you so much because the story that I was thinking about is when the operations manager came out and she had parked really weird.
Oh, yeah. That was a bad night. It was in New Orleans. We were opening up a new store and we would always go in the night before a new store opened and have a big party for the teams and, you know, kind of rah-rah, get them pumped up. We took the executive team out to a dinner that night, and he and I were leaving, and we got in the car, and I noticed this person, she was having trouble. She had pulled up kind of on a curb, and it wasn't a 3-point turn. It was about a 100-point turn, trying to get off this thing, and she fell off the curb, and the car clunked around and drove. And he looked at me, and he said, poor thing. And I said, yeah, that was a bad parking job. And he said, no. He goes, we're not going to be able to keep her. And I said, well, what does that mean? And he said, look, kid, he said, if she can't park a car and think through that part of the process, she's never going to be able to run a store for us. He said, it would have been better for her to park a block away and walk and be 5 minutes late than to pull up and try to, you know, rig something. He said, I want people who are going to do it the right way all the time. And I thought that was a little harsh, and I still think it's a little harsh. But the lesson is, take your time and do it right, because you're always on. You never know who's going to see you or what's going to happen. I will tell you a sidebar story from that. That's really cool. 20 years after that, we were doing a deal for another competitive store, but I left that industry, and I was meeting with the board of directors of this really, really large department store. They're old competitors. And I started out the board meeting by saying, you know, I used to be in retail. I started out, I said it wasn't very long, but I told them the story and I said it was great. And so I presented to the board, and the worst thing ever, they said, wait outside while we make our decision, which means you go sit there and keep your fingers crossed. And it could be yes, it could be no, but it's the longest 5 minutes of your life, I can promise you. So I was sitting outside, and they came back and they said, yeah, we'd love to work with you. So they awarded us the deal. So I was like, great. Thank you. I was so grateful. Well, this lady who was the head of HR came up, and she said, that gentleman you were talking about you work for, and she said his name. She said, was it this guy? And I said, yeah. And she said, have you seen him in a while? And I said, you know, I said, that's been 20 something years. I don't even know if he's still around. You know, he was kind of old then. So, nice. And she said, honestly, he's our chairman, like emeritus, whatever you call it. He is still around, and he's actually on our board. And I said, oh my God, that's amazing. I said, there's no way he's going to remember me, but if he does, will you please tell him? I said, hey. And she said, well, he's in the room next door. Do you want to see him? And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I would love to tell this man, thank you. You know, just thank you for launching my career. But I was fully braced. There's no way this guy would remember me. I worked with him for 6 months and 20 years ago, and I was just some kid, right? This guy comes in, he's this tiny little guy. Imagine a New Yorker little dude, the old guy. And he was the most charming man. He walks up to me, he looks up at me, he puts his hands on my face and pats my cheek like that. And he goes, I remember you. He goes, you were a good boy. And he looked over at the board, he goes, you do what this boy says. He's a good boy. You can trust him. And I was like, wow, that was
wow.
You never know when stuff comes back. And if you're always just trying to do the right thing and
do the right thing, it'll come back to you, won't it, Don? It really will. It really will. What I love that story. I had not heard that part of the story. So yeah. That is awesome. Well, Don, I have to ask you, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. I love your commitment to that and your story about your child and everything. It's just everybody does have that unique ability, right? And it's a gift. I don't believe that anyone out there is anything short of magnificent. I do believe that people get caught up in life and don't ever access their gift. And the gift could be discernment. It could be empathy. It could be inspiration, motivation. Who knows? But everybody's got that extra thing inside of them. And if you can let go of it, that's the best thing. And there's so many leadership things out there, you know, who, not how. There's all these rules. But I believe the number one rule in leadership is when you realize that you are not everybody else, nor is everybody else like you. That, you know, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I think, well, I know, the most misquoted thing in history is the golden rule. You know, do unto others you'd have them do unto you. But that's really good for 5-year-olds, right? And you're basically teaching them, hey, you like people be nice to you, so you be nice to them. Do unto everybody, treat people the way you want to be treated, right? That's incredibly selfish, right? So what if somebody doesn't want to be treated like you want to be treated? And I think leaders get hung up in themselves a lot. And they think, oh, I know what's best. I'm just going to go out there and everybody needs to be on this train. That's wrong. It's called cognitive cloning. When you get a group of people that's all the same, nothing's going to get done. Great leaders understand that you don't treat people the way you want to be treated. You treat people the way they want to be treated. And the number one thing that's universal is respect. If you can respect for somebody for who they are, mm-hmm. you take their gift, plug it into your narrative and your storyline. It's like you're a director of a beautiful play and you have all these actors and they all have their parts and they love their part. They want to do their part because that's their gift. That's their God-given talent. And if you can tap into that and let somebody be them and trust them to be them, then they become your hero and you become their hero. And this beautiful dance starts to occur. Mm-hmm. But it happens when leaders realize that you need people who are not like you, that you need to treat people the way they want to be treated. Find the right talent, find the right people. If they're not the right people, set them free to go find something else, you know, that's right for them. But encourage people to find that gift. Recognize everybody does have that extra thing about them that makes them special. Mm-hmm. Capitalize on that. Because I believe if you have 100 people that are kind of halfway doing something, but you had 5 people who are in their unique ability and their unique gift, those 5 people will outproduce those 100 people all day long. And higher integrity, more everything about it. So when leaders recognize that you don't have all the gifts and you can bring other people and help them find their gifts, then you're going to be better. And then even one more thing, celebrate when they leave. If you're a great leader and you bring somebody onto your team, then you need to appreciate that the day they began working for you is the day they began to leave you. That your job is just like a parent, is to get somebody in a position where they can leave you and go to do something better themselves. And I've always said that there's 3 important days. The first day, because you only get 1 first day. You know, The second day, because that means they came back. That's kind of important. That means they like the first day.
Right.
Last day. You want their last day to be a celebration that you're cheering for them because they spent time with you. They transferred their something extra to you and this team. But then whatever you were able to give them back, they take it and they're going to go out in the world and do something great with it. It's what you said earlier, Lisa. It's the planting the seeds for the trees. You'll never enjoy the shade. And if you treat people the way they want to be treated, if you realize it's short term, if you realize that you're just a steward, that you're going to hand the baton off, you can do amazing things. Yeah, that's how you get to heaven. Help somebody else get there first, right?
I love that. Love that, Don. Well, let me ask you one other question. I know that you're going to, because you told me on a sidebar conversation before we started, you said, you know, I'd love to be able to offer your listeners the ebook. Tell our listeners how they can find that.
Well, I will give it to you. So you can put it in your notes or they can send me an email. And I put this in your show notes too. It's Don, D-O-N. At dwbarden, BARDEN.com. Just say, hey, Don, I heard you on Lisa's show and I want to copy the book and I'll be happy to send it to you. It's an easy book. It was a doctoral book, but all that stuff's been stripped out. So it's an airplane book. You can read it on any air flight. And it really does give you insights on what the elite leaders do differently than everybody else. And it's not only used by the U.S. Army Rangers, it's used by Microsoft, Coca-Cola. I just got word it's being used in Reykjavik, Iceland this week. It's used in Tel Aviv. It's used, I'm really proud of it. It's used all over the world.
So exciting.
And it structures the obvious, where you're going to look at it and go, oh, I knew that. Okay, we'll do it. You know, this is what the 100% are doing. Here's the order. And more importantly, here's why. So I think when you read the book, you actually understand it. It's not just about knowledge, it's about understanding. And that's where wisdom comes from. So I would love to share that with everybody. It's free. And if I can help them, all they got to do is reach out. Anything we can do to help them in their company or coaching or training or anything like that, that's what we do. So
I would highly encourage you, if you are a listener and you love what you've heard today, reach out to Don. My good friend, like I said, Dave Sanderson is using him as an executive coach right now. And Don's just got so much wisdom to impart. So I would highly encourage you to do that. So Don, thank you again. This has just been such a delight for me. I've enjoyed every minute of our time together. So thank you for making the time.
Thank you. Keep being you, please. The world needs you. Just do you. Go out there and be you.
I appreciate that.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.